The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So being off on my retreat, I was on a self-retreat, and a student had let me use their house on the Oregon coast, and it was on a bluff above the ocean, sitting at about 75 feet above the ocean, but it had an ocean view. And there's also a walk, a bluff walk, where I could walk along the bluff and walk in the woods. And something about being in the presence of the ocean day after day after day in that way, and seeing in particular in this part of the Oregon coast, it's pretty wild. It felt really wild. And sometimes the waves were huge. They were enormous. One day in particular, there was a storm at high tide, and you know, the waves were probably between 30 and 50 feet. And the feeling in the first couple weeks of that retreat, being in that space with the ocean and just seeing the immensity of the power, sometimes I'd walk and just watch the waves crash against the cliffs. Sometimes seeing when a wave would crash against the cliffs, there'd be a rebound of water that would go back out, and it would meet an incoming wave, and there'd be a crash in the ocean where these two waves would meet, and they would explode in the ocean. And something about just seeing this and being in the space of this kind of energy really put me in touch with vulnerability. And so a lot of the first part of my retreat was really connected with opening to and exploring vulnerability, acknowledging the truth of it, acknowledging that as human beings we are vulnerable creatures. You know, as living beings, all living beings, there's a kind of a vulnerability, and when we can connect to and understand that, there's a very natural, in a way, if we're not resisting it, not fighting it, not denying it, there can be a very natural movement of compassion as we just see another being and recognize, yes, we're all so vulnerable. We are all subject to aging, illness, death. And death in particular, we don't know. I mean, with aging, we kind of, you know, get this slow kind of falling apart of the body. Sickness can sometimes come suddenly. I actually thought, I didn't get around to it, but I wondered if I could Google how many people each day are diagnosed with cancer. So people today were given that news, diagnosed with a life-threatening illness. So the news can come suddenly, even if the illness has been kind of creeping up. And how many people today died? Many, many people. And many of them, maybe even most, I don't know. You know, many of them probably didn't wake up thinking, this is my last day on the planet. Many of them probably were not kind of contemplating that. I listened to some of the stories after the shooting at the high school last week, and one of the things that some of the reporters were asking is, what were you thinking this morning when you got up? You know, what were you thinking about? And most of the kids were thinking about, you know, tests or friends or, you know, just things that were going to go on in their day, and just not at all thinking about this possibility that this could be a life-altering day for them. And this is the way we tend to live our lives. You know, we don't really acknowledge our own mortality. In one teaching from the Hindu tradition, the Mahabharata, it's a big epic poem about five brothers that kind of are banished and go off into the wilderness and have a lot of learnings, lessons about wisdom, compassion, effort, energy. And one of the learnings by one of the brothers, he was met by an energy that was asking him this question: what is the most amazing thing in our lives? What is the most amazing thing? Might have even been the word. What is the most wonderful thing? The greatest wonder. That was the language. What is the greatest wonder? And this this brother says, reflecting, "This, I think, is most wonderful. That people in the world, even though seeing before their eyes constantly creatures dying and passing away, never for a moment the idea enters them, I too have to fall. I too am a creature destined to be destroyed. Even if it is told to them, it never really enters the mind. Only the surface mind understands the language, but the actual sense never goes into the head. That everyone must one day must die, and yet everyone lives as though they were immortal. This is the greatest wonder." The Buddha encouraged us to reflect on these things, encouraged us to reflect on aging, illness, death. And my hope, my own experience in doing this, I'm feeling a little bit poignant, and you know, the vulnerability I touched into on the retreat and the poignancy and the horrificness of the shooting last week, you know, there's a tenderness there. And be feeling the vulnerability. And yet for me, this contemplation has not been one of depression, but more one of inspiration and waking up to this truth that we don't know when our last moment will be. And a kind of almost a reorientation of, well, what is most important to me given this truth? And this is truth. Aging, illness, death. The Buddha encouraged us to reflect on them as truths. There's it's a kind of a chant that was we're encouraged to learn to remember, and I'll just say it in English. It's, "I am of the nature to age. I have not gone beyond aging. I am of the nature to sicken. I have not gone beyond sickness. I am of the nature to die. I have not gone beyond dying. All that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will become otherwise, will become separated from me." And the final reflection is a reflection on the responsibility we have in this world, that the actions that we take are the actions that we, you know, that the actions that we put into the world kind of perpetuate What if we're putting wholesome actions into the world, it perpetuates and encourages wholesomeness. If we're putting unwholesome actions into the world, it perpetuates and encourages unwholesomeness. And to reflect on, how do I want to act? And I think pairing these together, these reflections, the reflections on impermanence and on our mortality, our frailty as human beings, with this reflection on how do we want to act? It's an important connection. How do we want to act in the world given this truth? So these truths are, they're easy to forget. You know, we get so caught up in our, what we're doing today, what we've done yesterday, what our friends are doing, you know, the Olympics. You know, I'm not saying to not watch the Olympics. I mean, I've been very much enjoying the Olympics and really almost treating it as a mudita and compassion practice. You know, just the joy of seeing those that do well and the sadness of those who in this moment, you know, don't. Have their best performance, and so you know it's not that I'm not denigrating the Olympics, but we can you know be just so involved in just day to day things and forget, you know, this might be my last day. This might be my parents, my mother or father's last day. This might be my siblings' last day. This might be my friend's last day. This truth of forgetting this. The Buddha spoke to this truth in a teaching story. I'll read some of it because the language is kind of fun, I think. My sense of fun is maybe, I don't know, a little weird, but This story is about, it's a myth or a kind of a teaching story of someone who has died and basically gone to hell. There are these notions of hell and heaven in the Buddhist realms. And he meets what's called the king of death, the lord of death, in the Buddhist, in the realm of hell, and this is supposed to be the deva or the heavenly being that is in charge of this realm, and so this being is called King Yama, and this being is arriving at the gates of hell, and King Yama questions him, saying, "Didn't you ever see, my good man, the first divine messenger appearing among humankind?" And the man says, "No, I didn't see it." And then King Yama says, "But my good man, didn't you ever see a woman or man aged 80, 90, or 100 years, frail, bent like a roof bracket, crooked, leaning on a stick, shakily going along, ailing, youth and vigor gone, with broken teeth, white and scanty hair, or no hair, wrinkled and blotched limbs?" Pretty vivid image. And the man replies, "Yes, I've seen this." And then King Yama says, "My good man, didn't it ever occur to you, an intelligent man and mature person, I too am subject to old age and cannot escape it. Let me do now noble deeds by body, speech, and mind." "No, I could not do it. I was negligent." And this happens to us all. We see, we hear these truths every single day, as the Mahabharata quote says. Even though seeing before their eyes constantly creatures dying and passing away, it never enters into anything but the surface mind. I too, this is my nature also. And so the Buddha encourages us to reflect on this nature. So reflection is a really powerful way in to this, at least in my experience. And that's what was happening for me on the retreat. Sometimes on retreat, various themes come up, you know. And it was interesting to me to see, you know, I would do something. It was a solo retreat. I was by myself. I had food, and I was preparing my food. And I would see images or, you know, things like... Like as I'm putting the kettle on the stove, you know, an image of myself getting burned, or you know, the knife when I'm cutting going through my hand. And actually, I did cut my thumb at one point. But you know, just images of the vulnerability of the body, and I took them not as anything to be depressed about, but just as kind of almost like this heavenly messenger of the frailness of the body was here asking to be seen. And so I allowed these thoughts and just reflected, yes, this body is frail. This body can be easily damaged. Very easy to damage this body. And there's one point on the retreat, that storm where the waves were coming very high. I went out for a walk that day. I decided I would go out into the storm and see. And it wasn't raining at the time, but I put on full rain gear so that, you know, if it started to rain. And as I was walking on the bluff, which was anywhere from 40 to, say, 70 feet above sea level, it was high above sea level, I was noticing that the waves were spraying the walk in certain places. So these were really high waves. You know, they were crashing against the cliffs way up. There was one house that was built, you know, right next to the cliff. It was like, here was the cliff and the house was right there. The window was right next to the cliff. It was like that. And it was probably 60, 70 feet above the level of the sea. But there was a crash right into the house, or the wall below the house. A wave broke at that level. It broke at, like, you know, 50 feet. And I was thinking, why? Why would somebody build a house like that? You know, if it had been even a foot higher, it would have crashed into the window. You know, it's like kind of mind-blowing. But I, as I understood later, this was like the storm of the century. This was not a normal occurrence here. But still, I was walking along this bluff and just kind of awestruck by these waves, and just kind of, you know, again, feeling the vulnerability and the awesomeness of the power of nature. And there was a place along this bluff where there was a rocks that went out, jutted out further away from the path where I was walking, and the community had built a whale watching platform out on that, those rocks. And I was watching there and wondered if I should go out there to get a little bit closer experience to these waves. And I saw that it was getting really wet, you know. It was getting sprayed regularly. So I decided not to go out there. The next day when I went out there, that platform was destroyed. And sometime between the time I was out there and, you know, and it probably happened within hours of after my walk, or maybe even minutes after my walk. I don't know. But what was so striking to me was that my contemplation of going out there on that whale watching platform, I contemplated whether I'd get wet. I did not contemplate dying. And that was kind of a little bit of a wake up for me. You know, it's like, yeah, right. Any moment it can happen. It was destroyed enough that if I had been standing there when the, you know, the wave hit, it would have knocked me over and kind of thrown me over the rocks and probably into the sea. So, yeah, I might not be here right now. So that kind of reflection on this moment and our choices, our actions. that create our reality, our lives. So reflecting on that, I didn't take it as depressing. It really felt like a wake-up call. You know, this is truth. The Buddha asks us to reflect on these as truths. We are all subject to aging. Some of us don't get to age because we are all subject to illness. And we are all subject to death. But we are all subject to that truth of aging. We are all subject to that truth of illness. And we all will die. That will happen for all of us. No question. And we don't know when. And so for me, that reflection has been inspiring of, again, how do I want to live my life? How does that land? Think about it. How does it land to reflect on that? You know, we all get on the freeway and drive down the freeway, and how many people lose their lives on a freeway every day? How do I want to live my life while I'm driving down that freeway? I actually brought this reflection into my mind while I was coming here, and it's like, how do I want to do this? You know, given the frailty of human beings, and that, you know, I don't know the people in these cars, but, you know, we're a mix of human beings in this. It's like we're a little community together here, driving down the freeway together. And some people in this community are going to live another 50 years, and some people are going to live another day. And there was a kind of a sense of care. You know, it brought in a sense of care. I want to take care of this community. I want to drive carefully. I want to be a good participant in this community as one that is caring for this process of driving down the road. And so it inspired a being present. And it created a sense of connection to myself, a connection to those around me, a feeling of compassion and a care. And it was just a lovely place to be in, to land in. It wasn't depressing. It was beautiful. And this, I think, is one of the real kind of mind shifts or mind turnings that happens around these reflections. Because habitually, I think we would think thinking about death would be depressing, or thinking about possibly having a diagnosis of life-threatening illness would be terrifying. But it doesn't have to be that. When we can bring in some, well, when we touch into the truth of that, for me, that vulnerability, we really touch into that vulnerability and the truth of that vulnerability. It can inspire us to be a better person, to have more of a sense of what our real priorities are. You know, we live according to certain priorities, and often our priorities are kind of about wanting to get something that we want or have people to see us a certain way. And when we really think about this or reflect on this, it begins to alter our priorities to something a little deeper. So what I'm curious for you, I mean, just reflect. You know, somebody did this reflection for me at one point, and it was very interesting, so I'm going to offer it to you right now. So if you were told you had a year left to live, how would you want to live that year? What would be the priorities? You know, what comes into your heart? How do I want to live if I have a year left to live? And I really want to point to, you know, this reflection. Again, it's connected to action. It's not just about, oh, this is truth and we just sit here and don't do anything. To me, this reflection can inspire a certain kind of action. And so, what do you want to do? How do you want to be? And so those two pieces, you know, what's important to you inwardly and outwardly if you have a year? Now we're going to shrink it down. You have a month. What's important if you have a month left? How do you want to be? Maybe, who do you want to be with? How do you want to be with them? And what do you want? How do you want to act? What do you want to do in the world? And now, you have an hour. What's most important to you in that hour? Where do you want to be? How do you want to be? And then after this reflection, just thinking about this reflection, because for me there were very different kinds of priorities that happened at those three levels. And it felt to me, at least, it felt to me that how I was or what I wanted to do in that last hour, it was beautiful in a way. I mean, it was poignant and it was beautiful to reflect on, I just want to be here, you know. I really want to be here in that last hour and sit in the sun and smell the flowers, you know. That was kind of what came to me. And I realized, you know, okay, I can't live my whole life as if it's always my last hour. Because we do have to engage. And yet, so there's this interesting paradox of, you know, knowing this may be our last hour, that truth, it may be our last hour. And yet, how might that inform living as if it's not our last hour, but that we have things that we can do and engage with and work with in the world? I really admire those students who, having lost their friends, chose to act and speak up what was in their hearts. You know, it's not about seeing this truth and not acting. Sometimes I feel like when we really connect with this kind of truth, it can inspire a deeper kind of action. And so that's the piece I want to also encourage in reflection right now. Having gone through this, what kind of priorities does it feel like this reflection inspires you to live your life by? Does it create any sense of the word in Pali is sambhega, or spiritual urgency, some kind of connection to showing up in the world in a different way? What might that look like for you? And it will look different for each of us, really, really different. And I feel like we can't assume it will always look the same for each of us. I know people, I know monks in Burma who sit in very secluded monasteries in the hills and receive visitors, but rarely go out. You know, that they're kind of the recluse. And I know, and then there are people like the Dalai Lama, who's really out there on the world stage and speaking and acting. And this recluse, in my experience, has an impact on the world in a very different way than the Dalai Lama does. But I've been touched by that monk. The seeing of that, the being in his presence, creating this sense of immediate, like I walked into a wall or a sea of peace, just being there. Like, this is something to aspire to. And maybe something of that carries through me out into the world. And so we touch each other. We affect each other. And I don't feel like I can judge one person who's a recluse and one person who seems more active and say one is better than the other. And so whatever feels like it's arising for you in this reflection, you know, honoring it. And I'd like to see if you're willing to kind of in small groups share some of what you reflected on. Right now it might be useful to think about what would you be willing to share with two or three other people in this room, so that it's not like, you know, sharing into the mic or anything. You know, that would be a little more intense. But what might you be willing to share from that? And this is not, you don't have to participate if you don't want to. You're welcome to just sit quietly. But if you are interested in this, why don't you, you know, if you're not interested, you don't have to find a group or anything. But if you are interested, then, you know, we'll do this for maybe 10 minutes. Just, you know, sharing something of what you reflected on. Because sometimes it can actually be supportive to speak these truths, to actually say something to other human beings about how this has affected you and what might this inspire you. How might this inspire you? So finding two or three other people to just come into a group with, and so two or three to four people in a group. So you can maybe have 2 minutes a person, something like that, to just reflect on this. And then I'll ring a bell and say, 8 minutes or so. Or if it starts to get quiet, if it seems like the groups are getting quiet, then I'll ring the bell. And you might say each other your names to each other again, too. So thank you for participating in that, or not, if it didn't work for you. One of the things I really appreciate about community is this opportunity, and it's like sometimes we can, in this kind of a situation, have conversations that we wouldn't normally have, you know, about things that are pretty important to us, and yet, you know, we're always up in this kind of place of what we, you know, are doing, and we don't end up dropping down. And sometimes there can be surprising connection, and so I hope that was supportive for you. I want to offer a couple of quotes and then see if there's any comments or questions about anything that I've said, or from the Dhammapada. Many do not realize that we here must die. For those who realize this, quarrels end. And it's a lovely reflection that when we really get that we are going to die, so much. This is another quote from Don Juan, from Carlos Castaneda. An immense amount of pettiness is dropped if your death makes a gesture towards you. You know, that kind of just, right, oh, this is what's important. One from my university magazine. I went to the University of New Hampshire, and this quote popped out at me from my university magazine. One of the philosophy professors there, Nick Smith, said, "Aliens looking down on Earth would surely see a civilization of screen dwellers. You have X number of hours to live on this planet. What percentage of those hours do you want to spend in front of a screen? When it comes time to die, are you going to think, oh, I should have had more screen time?" And then everything, and this is by, I think he's a Thai monk, Pra Kantipalo. "Everything and everybody, that includes you and me, deteriorates, ages, decays, breaks up, and passes away. And we, living in the forest of desires, are entirely composed of the impermanent. Yet our desire impels us not to see this, though impermanence stares us in the face from every single thing around. And it confronts us when we look within, mind and body arising and passing away. So don't turn on the TV, go to the pictures, read a book, see some food, or 100 other distractions just to avoid seeing this. This is the one thing really worth seeing, for one who fully sees it in oneself is free." And so this really points to this is, you know, this everyday understanding. And it's just like it's staring us in the face. And it's pointing to something very deep, very profound. And if we are willing to see it, it helps us to let go of things that are more petty. It helps us to shift our priorities towards things that are more resonant with our, maybe our deepest aspiration, our deepest wishes. So comments or questions or thoughts that you want to share with the group or with me, anything.
Yeah, so I guess the thing that I thought about was the importance of connection and relationships. And I have a lot of conditioning around sort of not wanting to be intimate with other people or sort of feeling like that's not important or I should be self-reliant. And truly, it seems like that will be the most important thing. Mm. I think about this story because I like to tuck my mom into bed at night, and it's the mom tucks the son into bed, and then eventually she's really old and sick, and she's like, it's like her last night, or maybe she's even passed already, but the son tucks her into bed and sings her this song that she always sung to him. Mm. So I think about that a little bit.
Yeah, this question of self-reliant is so cultural in some ways. You know, we feel like we're supposed to be able to take care of ourselves, and yet, you know, again, looking at, reflecting on how we work, there's no way we can take ourselves out of community. One day I was going through the grocery store buying my food for the week. And for some reason, it's like something about being in there in that moment, the reflection came up around how many people, not only in the store, but the people who drove the trucks to bring the yogurt and the lettuce and the tomatoes and the beans. And it's like, wow, how many people are helping me here? You know, what kind of community? This I felt like I was right in the middle of a community by walking through the grocery store. Everything I saw had this lineage of beings. We cannot be completely self-reliant. Really. Well, this reflection came on my retreat, too. This was kind of fun. Oh, I'm glad I remembered this. I one night was having, for my evening meal, toast and peanut butter with a little bit of honey and an apple. That was my dinner. And I thought, oh, this is a nice, simple dinner. And then as I was eating it, I thought, well, maybe it's not so simple. You know, how many generations of humans did it take before we knew how to bake bread? You know, and you know, when it started happening, you know, the amount of work it goes into, the amount of human labor initially that went into the wheat fields and just the whole, you know, the whole thing there. It's like this bread represents a lot of effort. You know, it's not simple. And the peanut butter, well, the peanut butter's a little bit simpler because it's, you know, but it took somebody to dig the peanuts up. And then to grind them, you know, shell the peanuts, that's not an easy thing, although we have machines for it now. But somebody has to take care of the machine. Somebody has to make sure the machine is working. And somebody has to you know, truck the things, drive the things around. And it's like, this is not a simple meal. And I'm reliant on all the beings that created this. And not only the beings who did it now, but the history of creation, the history of our species inventing bread. It's kind of stunning, you know. We invented bread. Our species invented this thing, invented the oven to bake it in. And so it was a lovely reflection that, wow, you know, this thing's like, oh, this is just a simple meal, but no, it's not so simple. So that was another thought that came on my retreat. Any other comments or reflections? Yeah. Christine?
I had quite a...
Yep, can you hear me?
Okay. Started out real, when you said a year, that was pretty easygoing. Oh, yeah, I would do this and that. Even a month, I would do this and that, and I would see this person, and I would build this relationship. And when you said an hour, I was hit with this wave of emotion, and I cried because I know exactly what I would want to do in 1 hour, but I realized I don't know if it's possible because that person that I'd want to be with, there is so much animosity and problem and disconnect, and just I don't even know if it would be possible.
Yeah,
and that felt so sad.
Yeah.
Just to sit there and go, wow, I know where I'd want to be, but would that person want to be with me?
Yeah, that's a beautiful kind of reflection and one that potentially might inspire action.
Oh, yeah, I feel very profoundly that I was having some trouble letting go, that things have changed. And the grasping, the clinging and wanting it to be this other way, maybe that relationship has shifted.
Yeah.
And I can fight against that, but we're going to continue to be at odds.
Uh-huh.
And maybe it's time to stop.
To relax, to let go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've been coming to that already before you said that. It's been kind of dropping in passing moments as I meditate, as I reflect, but that one idea of, wow, maybe I have to do something radically different than what I've been doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. That's beautiful. You know, how that kind of reflection of this might be my last day, what would I do with it, can inform us to choose differently for, well, we don't, it's not our last day necessarily, you know, it might inform our choices to be a little different, to think about that. So thank you for sharing that. Yeah. And it's time to stop, so thank you for going there with me on this one. Thanks.